seems only fitting that I should do this lesson today on January the 1st, first day of the year, and lots of folks are making resolutions or commitments. And this sermon, or I call it a lesson, it's just James Clinton's lesson from several years back. But it shows exactly what can be done when you make the right kind of commitment, where commitment can lead. You know, all of us are going to make commitments to exercise more, lose weight, do this, do that. I've got one myself. Mine's going to start as soon as I get home from Roadhouse. But that, commitments can mean something. Again, this is James Clinton's lesson. I'm just re-narrating it. The history of the Saratoga Church of Christ. This church has been in existence 147 years. It took commitment to serve the Lord several generations and for it to have existed this long. The Saratoga Church had its beginning in 1875. According to Charlie Cannon, two men rode horses and led a third horse some 60 miles to get a preacher. The trip took 4 or 5 days, and the preacher's name was J.R. Jones. Uncle Charlie and the preacher stayed and preached until a congregation was established. I do not know if elders and deacons were appointed while he was here, but if not, some were appointed shortly thereafter. The first elders were Giles Walker, Sam McJunkins, and Walter Fricks. There were probably many things that hindered the newly organized church. Charlie Fricks told me that his father, Walter Fricks, said they had a lot of opposition from the denominations of this area. It may be hard for us to realize the extent of the opposition. Today, we are the established group of the area. Back then, there were Methodist Church at Saratoga, and they were the established group. There were Methodist, Baptist, and Presbyterian churches at Columbus, and they were established and thriving. Today, there are only two small groups of Baptists that meet at Columbus and OK. The Methodist and Presbyterian churches at Columbus no longer exist. There were converts from these denominations. Anytime this happens, there is opposition. Some of our members today are converts from the denominational world, and you probably experienced unpleasant reactions. Hostility may have been the reaction, and I have an idea that hostility was what the people of this newly formed congregation faced. Another problem they faced was that they did not have a building to meet in. They had to meet in the houses of members. The houses back then had wide halls down the middle of the house. My grandmother McJunkins told me that they would put boards on blocks in the hallway to sit on. These type inconveniences could have caused them to give up. They were committed to the Lord, and they did not give up. Another problem, they did not have a regular preacher. This church was in existence 80 years before we had a regular preacher. Mason Harris came to work with us in 1955. From 1875 until 1955, the bulk of the preaching and teaching was done by poor, uneducated dirt farmers. A preacher may have preached every fifth Sunday or something like that. The rest of the preaching and teaching was done by local men. When Zach is gone, we have men who step up and fill in and do a very capable job. We have a house full of college-educated people. We also have computers, smartphones, commentaries, concordances, and Bible dictionaries, plus other aids to help with our study. Most work jobs with regular hours and have at least 2 days off a week. Some of us are retired and have plenty of time to study. All of us can testify that preparing a lesson is hard work and time consuming. The people in the early years of this congregation were farmers and worked from sunup till sundown, with no days off except the first day of the week when they took time to assemble and worship God. They did not have the study aids that we have today. They only had the Bible. I might add that during this time, members of the Church of Christ were known as walking, talking Bibles. Their study habits would put us to shame. They could have thrown up their hands in exasperation, but they didn't. The reason they didn't is because they were committed to serving the Lord faithfully. Another problem, the first meeting house was built in 1879 at what we call High Hill Cemetery, which is about 2 miles east of Saratoga. By the late 1880s, to get out of the blackland mud and have better water, the people began to move to the sandy ridge that is now Saratoga. It was 1906 before a meeting house was built at this present location in Saratoga. The folks that had moved to Saratoga had to travel at least 2 miles to worship. You may think that 2 miles is nothing compared to how far some of our folks travel to worship today. We have folks that travel from communities all over Southwest Arkansas today, and you're to be commended. You are to be commended because that is evidence of your commitment to the Lord. You have to realize that we have the comfort of good automobiles and good highways to travel on today. There were no highways in this area in the late 1800s or the early 1900s, only wagon trails. The only means of travel was by horse-drawn wagon, horseback, or walking. When it rained, they got wet. When it snowed, they got cold. When it was the middle of July, it was hot. It would have been easy for them to say it was too much trouble and quit, but they didn't because they were committed to serving the Lord. Another problem, when the church was located at High Hill, they identified themselves as the Plum Creek Christian Church. It was 1900 before they identified themselves as the Church of Christ. Some of our young people may not know that the Christian Church and Church of Christ split over the Missionary Society and instrumental music. The Missionary Society was an organization set up separate and apart from the local church, as its name implies. It oversaw the preaching and teaching, especially in foreign fields. Of course, there is no scriptural authority for such an organization. The Missionary Society had been around several years before the instrumental music problem arose. Feelings ran high on these issues, and many discussions and debates took place in the late 1800s and early 1900s. The Saratoga Church came into existence during this turmoil. All this controversy had to have affected the Saratoga Church. Since we do not know anything that went on other than what they call themselves, let me tell some things that took place in other places. This may help give us some insight into the feelings the Saratoga congregation may have had. It seems that instrumental music got the most attention at the time. It seems that instrumental music got the most attention at the time the Saratoga Church was established. The first instrumental music was introduced in the worship services in 1859 at Midway, Kentucky. The first instrument was a melodeon, which is a small pump organ. One of the elders of Midway, named Adam Hibbler, was opposed to instrumental music. He and a slave named Reuben went to the building one night. Mr. Hibbler sent Reuben into the building through a window, and Reuben passed the melodeon out the window. Mr. Hibbler smashed the melodeon to pieces with an axe in the front lawn of the church. Among much anger and confrontation, another melodeon was brought in, and Mr. Hibbler and Reuben removed this one as well, but hid it in his own barn. A third melodeon was brought in, but by this time, Mr. Hibbler apparently saw that he was fighting a losing battle. The melodeon stayed until the church building was destroyed by fire in the early 1900s. Another incident in 1894 at Thorpe Springs, Texas, an organ was brought in to be used during a gospel meeting. As services were about to begin, an old man approached his two sons, who were responsible for bringing in the organ. He begged them not to use it. The sons refused, and the old man, along with several others, left the building in protest. As they were walking out, one of the sons turned to the lady at the organ and said, "Play on, Miss Bertha." To me, this was the height of contempt, not only for his father, but for the God of heaven. One more example. In 1923, which was several years after the split between the Christian and the Church of Christ, the instrumental music issue was still being debated. A debate took place at Nashville, Tennessee, at the Ryman Auditorium. For those who may not remember or know, the Ryman Auditorium was where the Grand Ole Opry was held in its early days. Interest in the debate was high. Between 6,000 and 7,000 attended each night of the week-long debate. Newspapers throughout Middle Tennessee advertised the debate. Reporters and photographers from all over were on hand to report the event. Can you imagine a religious debate causing that much interest today? The Saratoga Church had its beginnings while all this type of controversy was going on. I do not know why the original members of the Saratoga Church chose to be identified as the Christian Church. I do not know, but doubt very much that the instrument of music was ever used. I also doubt that they supported the Missionary Society. I can't help but believe a lot of study, soul searching, and probably controversy took place when the change was made to be identified as the Church of Christ. If they had failed to make the change, we would not be here today. We should be thankful that they were committed to serving the Lord, which caused them to make the necessary change. Another problem. In 1949, we needed to build a new building, or it wouldn't be long until we were meeting under a shade tree. A couple of people, for sentimental reasons, did not want the old building tore down. A few people did not think that we could afford a new building. The old building was in bad shape, and that is putting it mildly. It originally was a two-story building with a 60-foot bell tower. By 1949, the second floor and bell tower had been torn off, and it was a one-story building. It was literally falling down one board at a time. For seating, we had some homemade benches with backs, the most uncomfortable things you ever sat upon. We only had two classrooms, with the high school and junior kids used. Us smaller kids had class in the back of the auditorium, while the adults had class in the front. The adults could talk as loud as they wanted, but us kids and teachers had to whisper so that we wouldn't disturb the adults. C.R. Nichols was probably the last preacher to hold a gospel meeting in this old building. He really shamed us for the condition of our building. If the opposition had won, it is a good possibility we would not be here today. When the decision was made to demolish the old building and building the building that we meet in today, everyone bonded together as one and worked together. Everyone was committed to serving the Lord. Another problem, in 1966, this church split over the institutional issues. The main issues were the sponsoring church and orphans' homes. For those who may not know, the sponsoring church is where a church takes on work that they cannot afford, such as TV ministries and or support of preachers in foreign fields. Then they appeal to other churches for help to carry on this work. If someone had looked back at history, this mistake maybe could have been avoided. The sponsoring church and missionary society are almost the same type of arrangement, and neither is scripturally authorized. Let me tell you something that may be of interest, especially if you do not know this. When Mason Harris preached for us, we had what I guess you would call a TV ministry. We did not appeal to other churches for help, though. We fully funded the work from our own funds. Television was in its infancy in this part of the country. Channel 6, which is now located in Shreveport, was located at Texarkana at that time. On Sunday afternoons, Mason Harris went to Texarkana and preached on TV. Miss Barney and Miss Erin Stanton, along with Ray Mobley and Gilbert Harwell, went along and sang a couple of songs on the program. The orphan home question was the issue that drew the most attention. People could get stirred up more over orphans. We were branded as being against taking care of poor little orphan children. That is mainly how we became known as a bunch of Annies. Of course, nothing could be further from the truth. The only thing we are against is church-supported organizations that has no scriptural authority. When the split took place, it was awful. Families were torn apart, brother against brother, sister against sister, son against father, friend against friend, employer against employee. As bad as it was, we came out of it a lot better than most of our brethren in other places that opposed these unscriptural innovations. We were able to keep our building and most of our members. In other churches throughout the land, the brethren that opposed these unscriptural innovations were in the minority. They had to find other places to meet. Let me give you a few examples. There were two churches in Hope. Both churches embraced the unscriptural innovations. The brethren that opposed are the small group that they call themselves the Eastside Church of Christ today. There were four churches in Texarkana, or that is all I can think of. Early in the controversy, a group left the County Avenue Church and the Dudley Avenue Church and started the Franklin Drive Church. At Fulton in the mid-1950s, a man named Sam Weaver built the church building. When I say he built it, I mean he literally built it with his own hands. I'm sure he had financial help, but he built the building himself. A few years later, when the institutional controversy arose, he along with a few others had to find another place to meet. Brother Weaver moved down the road a piece and built another building on his own property. These are just a few examples of how brethren were put out of their meeting places. This happened all over the land. How then did the Saratoga Church fare so well over this problem? How has this church been able to overcome problems throughout all the 147 years it has been in existence? One word will answer that question. One word will answer that question: commitment. Let us be committed as our forefathers in the faith. Let me leave you with these thoughts as we bring this to a close. We should be ever vigilant, as 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8 warns us. Our adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. The devil is out there, and if he detects the least bit of weakness in our commitment, he will move in and completely destroy us. To avoid this happening, we need to always keep 1 Corinthians 16, verse 13 in mind. Watch, stand fast in the faith, be brave, be strong. Watch means to be constantly on guard and prepared. It takes commitment to be constantly on guard. Stand fast in the faith. When we stand fast, we refuse to give up. It takes commitment to stand fast. Be brave. Bravery is a mindset. One has to be brave to stand fast. Again, commitment is a must. Be strong. The stronger we are, the better we can stand fast. Commitment. It takes commitment. Let us be committed to the cause of Christ. Let us always keep in mind that our goal is to please Him and not ourselves. Let us be committed. Now, I've got one thing here I wanted to add that's not part of what John Clinton said. A famous man once said, "Freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it on to our children in the bloodstream. It must be fought for, protected, and handed on for them to do the same." And I can stand here and say that I think that our commitment to faithfulness and serving Christ has to be the same way. It's not passed down in the bloodstream. We have to take our children to church and be committed that they carry on the way that these folks before us have. That is all I have to say. If there is anyone here that wishes to be baptized and commit your life to Christ, please come forward. If there is someone that needs to recommit their life and needs the prayers of the church, we invite you to come as we stand to sing.